Welcome to the Rap Report with your host, Andrew Rappaport, where we provide biblical interpretation and application. This is a ministry of Striving for Eternity and the Christian podcast community. For more content or to request a speaker for your church, go to strivingforeternity.org.
Well, welcome to the Rap Report. Bud, you hearing me okay?
What?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to talk when we got these masks on.
You're muffled.
Yeah, but I got my nice mask that I'm supposed to wear when I go out. You know, this is if you can read this one for those who are on Patreon watching the video. There's R.C. Sproul.
Yeah,
you're wearing the shirt. What's wrong with you people?
I got the billboard T-shirt on. So
you know, we're wearing these in honor of our special guest here. But what's your mask say?
Well, on a backdrop of the flames of perdition is the word repent.
Repent.
Repent. Yeah.
So you wear that out, and people ask you what they got to repent of.
It hasn't provoked anything so far.
Yeah, you're not wearing it enough. See, mine, at least.
Even greater social distancing.
The thing is, with mine, people that don't, you know, if you have to wear this mask, you're going to suddenly go, oh, look at that. What's wrong with you people? That must be referring to the people that wear masks. But in case, you know, let me take this off so I could be heard a little better.
Can
you hear me better now?
Oh, wait, what have you got now?
Oh, I'm sorry, I still have another mask on. That's John MacArthur saying, go home. is that... Oh, let me take that one off. How's that? Is that better now? How about that one?
Oh, yes. See?
See, I got Kenneth Copeland blowing away Kenneth COVID. Copeland. Because he blew it away and it's over. It was done.
Yep.
Yeah. So... So we're going to talk today about masks, whether we should wear them. Obviously, as you could already tell, that one of the big problems is you can't hear anybody that's wearing these masks.
And Anthony, one of the most severe results of all this, the effects, you don't see people smiling anymore.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you know, Ray Comfort constantly says I judge people by their teeth, and I can't do that anymore. Yes. When everybody's wearing masks.
So let us introduce our guest today. That is Dr. Anthony Silvestro. And if you don't know, the joke he just gave is the fact that he is a dentist by trade. He is one of the speakers at Striving Fraternity and also a speaker with Christian Training Institute, with Mike Riddle's organization. And so he is joining us. He's actually here with me in person. And so he's going to be preaching at my church this weekend. And so we figured we would record with him. And the topic that we're going to talk about is whether Christians should not wear a mask. Now, Anthony, it would be fair to say you and I have gone back and forth on this. You haven't changed your position at all. You know, we'll discuss whether it's rebelliousness or not. But you know, we want to discuss, because this is a topic that a lot of people are bringing up, whether or not to wear a mask. And so this is something I think that would be beneficial, because this is a question a lot of people are discussing, especially when it comes to those churches that are finally, and some still are not, but those that are finally starting to open up and get together. And the first thing that becomes a question is, do we wear a mask or not? I'm going to be at the Cruciform Conference in a few weeks, and I'll give some more information about that at the tail end of the show. But one of the questions that everyone's asking me is, do I have to wear a mask? Anthony and I were talking about the G3 cruise that we're scheduled to go on. And, you know, it's like, you know, I'm paying all this money to be on a cruise, but I don't want to have to wear a mask everywhere I go. That's not enjoyable, right? So do we still want to go? These are the things that we have to deal with as we deal with these issues, but we want to come at this from a biblical perspective and understanding the reasons we should or should not wear a mask. So, Anthony, let me start with you and ask you, you take a strong position against wearing masks. So we give you an opportunity to explain, you know, why you won't even wear this beautiful, you know, R.C. Sproul saying what's wrong with you people, or John MacArthur saying go home. You know, which now more people at least recognize John MacArthur, or, you know, at least Bud is evangelizing with his repentance.
And I believe in all three of those, all three of those messages strongly. So I don't know. What's wrong with you people?
You're a consummate evangelist. I know. Yeah. I've seen you doing it. This would be perfect.
Yeah. I would rather wear it on a t-shirt or on my forehead. You know, I think that there's two different arguments to be made, and both of which would show that we should not be wearing masks. We have a biblical, we have set of biblical arguments as to why I don't believe we should be wearing masks. And then we have to look at the science, because the reasons that the secular world are giving is what they claim to be scientific evidences. So does the science actually support wearing masks? That's a question. The answer is no. And so we're gonna walk through that today.
Well, so from the biblical perspective, I think what you were saying is, because I know you've been working on a message on James and the use of the tongue. So there, you know, but we have plenty of verses that say, you know, 1 Peter 4:8, you know, love covers a multitude of sins, and if the tongue is a sin, you know, that's biblical, isn't it? Or you know, we could look at James 5. That's within the same context. 5:20, it says that, you know, let him know that he who saves a sinner from error all his ways saves a soul from death and covers a multitude of sins. So, see, the Bible talks about coverings.
Yeah, I mean, Ezekiel 28 says, "And I have destroyed you, O covering cherub." So,
let me just go a different way and suggest that since we brought up science, Paul in 1 Corinthians 8 says, knowledge makes arrogant, but love edifies. So that might be a response to that. We've got scientific knowledge, which is highly contentious, even in the secular arena.
Yeah, but we also have Jeremiah 3:25. Let us lie down in our shame and let our humility cover us. See, that's talking about covering. See, so it's biblical to cover. No,
if we're
no.
just going to do battles of the Bible verses, I got to get my iPad up.
These are clearly not talking about coverings, meaning masks. These are not the way to interpret Scripture. No,
yeah, but that sort of has an atoning quality to it, I think, is what that implies.
Yes. So, but in a more serious note, though, we will get to a what. Should be, I think, a biblical perspective that we would have on this. I think there is passage of scriptures that we can use without looking for the word covering and then trying to, you know, make things up. But let's start with the science and then move to the biblical. So, Anthony, your background as a dentist, you in your role as a dentist have to wear a mask when you're working with a patient, and you have for years. A lot of people don't know some of the background, what doctors understand about the mask. So let me ask you, how often do you change your mask and why?
Yeah. So I want to preface your question by saying this. Dentists have been wearing masks since the early 1980s, as well as gloves.
Yeah, well, some of us actually remember, and this is Bud, this is beyond Anthony's knowledge. He doesn't understand this, but there's some of us that can still remember the taste of our dentist's fingers. You know, my dentist as a child was obviously a tobacco smoker, and I could taste it when he stuck his fingers in my mouth, and he didn't wear a mask.
You have no idea how many patients tell me this, older patients tell me this. Notice I said older patients tell me this. But yeah, they could taste this. They could taste the cigar smell.
Yep.
On their hands. So, yeah, this goes, certainly, it goes back a long time. But, yeah, so masks have been worn since the early 80s. It was really the AIDS scare that caused this to occur. And it was a fear of AIDS and HIV that caused this. And I'll tell you, we know a lot more about HIV today than we did back then. And there are certain protocols that are in place in medicine that are really good as a result of that scare. And there's some that probably are not really helpful. Having said all that, dentists understand aerosols probably better than any other medical profession. Now, we've got commercial aerosols, right? So people who work in factories, and there are certain masks you have to wear for aerosols there. If you're working with LEDs, especially with like lead, the old lead paints, now if you're working with different chemicals, there are different types of masks and filtration systems you have to not only wear, but the room actually has to have certain filtration systems. But in medicine, when we're talking about bacteria and viruses and fungus, which is what can infect us, right? We're not talking about the heavy metals and different things that are in regular industry. When we're talking about these biological issues, now when we talk about dentists, we understand aerosols better than literally anybody in medicine. We've been dealing with aerosols since the 80s. We have literally 40 years of research of aerosols in understanding what aerosols, what they are, how far they can travel, what travels in them, and what our masks actually do. Now, it would shock people to know this. When we wear masks in the dental office, number one, it is not about protecting ourselves against aerosols. We've known full well all these years that aerosols go through masks. This is known. Go ask your friendly dentist or your friendly doctor, unless they've bought the Kool-Aid, but ask them what the research has shown for the last several decades, and they will tell you this. The reason why we wear masks as dentists is to block the splatter. Because as we know, as we're drilling on teeth, as we're doing surgeries in the mouth, there are times that you get blood splattering. And it does stop the blood splatter. But this, I give this as a backdrop, Andrew, because you asked the question about, in terms of their effectiveness, right? And here's the issue is what do the masks actually block out and what do they not block out? How often do we exchange the masks was your first mm-hmm. question. The moment you sneeze or cough into a mask, you are to change your mask. When you are in the middle of a surgery and you start to get blood splatter up on your mask, the first chance you get, you change your mask. Why? Right? That's the question. Now, why is it? Well, it's very simple. When you cough out or sneeze out stuff, you've got mucus particles, you have saliva droplets, and there's going to be bacteria and fungus and viruses that can and are attached to these droplets. The problem is that if you took a couple drops of water and put them on your desktop and then took a fan and blew the fan over that droplet of water, how long does it take before that droplet of water aerosolizes? 15 seconds, 30 seconds. I mean, think about this. When you wash your hands in a public bathroom and then you go to a public dryer, right? You hit the button and you wipe your hands and it blows air and it dries. A little bit's the heat, a little bit's the air moving. How long does it take for your hands to dry? 15 to 30 seconds, maybe. Yeah. Guess what's happening in your masks? You cough or sneeze into it. Your droplets dry within 15, 30, maybe 60 seconds. And then what do you think happens to all those viruses and bacteria and fungus spores? You blow them right through those holes in the mask. See, what people don't recognize, and you can go to the CDC website today and you can read this. You can go to the mask manufacturers today and you can read this on their website. The coronavirus specifically is 125 nanometers in size, give or take, right? Our research shows about 125 nanometers. Our masks, the ones that people are wearing, are blocking out particles that are micron-sized. If you got a really good mask, maybe it's a tenth of a micron. But the reality is that coronavirus is literally 1,000 times smaller than the holes in the masks that most people are wearing.
That makes it sound like it's not really going to protect very much.
Well, that's the point, right? That's the science of this. Is that, and so the media, and I've traced this because I was starting to do live Facebook videos back in early April on this subject. At first, the media was lying to people. They were saying the coronavirus is some mega-sized virus. And so they were claiming it was in the micro-sized particle range. And just for anybody who doesn't know the math, let me explain it to you. You've got a meter. then when you take...
We're in America. We do things by foot.
Wow, that's a hard conversion. Then. Well,
2.2, I think.
Yeah. So what I'll say is this is micro is 1,000 times bigger than nano. That we can know. If you don't know a lot of math, I'll just tell you that as a fact. You can go look it up later. So they were lying about the coronavirus. They said it was nano-sized. Or I'm sorry, they said it was micro-sized when it was really nano-sized. They were lying that it was 1,000 times bigger than what it actually was. When people started to catch on with this issue, then they changed the narrative and said, well, it's the droplets. The droplet size is micro-sized. And that's what we're trying to protect against, is the droplets. To which now, what we were just talking about makes... we can make sense of this now, right? Droplets, yes, droplets can get caught by cloth masks. Yes, droplets can get caught by pantyhose pulled over your head or whatever else people are using today.
Well, their shirt.
Or their shirt.
Their shirt or yeah. A piece of cloth.
Well, bank lobbies are closed, so you can probably get away with the pantyhose thing over your head now. I don't know.
Yeah, and that right there is kind of interesting because I found it interesting that the, Black Lives Matter protests, when they were first protesting, were not wearing masks. And then when they started doing criminal activity, they suddenly were all wearing masks. And everyone thinks it's because of the health reasons. They wouldn't in any way want to wear a mask for any other reason, like to cover their face from all the cameras.
I missed that argument. Well, yeah. All right, so let me ask you this. Let's make it a hypothetical because I don't want to confess that I did this. Going through the grocery store down the soup aisle, and I didn't have a mask on, or a person didn't have a mask on, and a little old lady comes up and says, she's all masked up, very sweet little old lady, and she says, wow, I really like your cologne. What kind is it? I need to get some for my husband. And I said, wait just a second. Or the person may have said, wait, do you realize you could smell my cologne through your mask? And she's like, I didn't think about that. I guess cologne is much smaller than the virus.
Yeah, and actually it's not. Well,
that's not where I was going with that. Yeah.
No, and that's what's crazy about this is it was just a month, maybe 6 weeks ago that we saw the California wildfires really breaking out. And you had the CDC as well as other organizations saying that masks will not help you with smoke inhalation.
Oh, yeah, right? Well, yeah, I can buy that.
To which all the scientists were saying, wait a minute. Smoke particles are much larger than viruses, especially coronavirus, which is one of the smallest viruses known to man. So, yeah, it's really interesting. There's been some guys out there saying, wait a minute, if you can smell somebody's breath through their mask, is it really blocking viruses? The same way that that you can smell stench through somebody's clothes, right? If they're not wearing deodorant or... It's literally the same logic. And so we look at the science, and this is what the science is actually showing. The holes in a mask are literally 1,000 times larger than the coronavirus. And so coronavirus blows right through it. Even the droplets, once the droplets dry within 15 or 30 seconds of being on your face, the virus blows right through the mask anyway. And so... theoretically, if somebody wants to use masks to block droplets, the only way to do it is for you to carry a bunch of masks in your pocket that are decent masks, and you switch them out every time you cough or sneeze. But there's one other problem here. We also know in dentistry and medicine that you cannot wear a mask for a particularly long time. And the reason why is because water vapor tends to also break down the mask even further. So the mask already has pores in it. The aerosols, just from our normal breathing, the water vapor, normal breathing, breaks down those fibers, creates even bigger holes in the mask on a microscopic level. So if we're wearing the same mask for several hours, let alone the same mask for several days, guess what's happening? We're blowing right in and out of this thing anyway.
Well, so, and you're speaking of the the mask we're seeing so many people wear, those little blue masks that have they use in dentistry and elsewhere, where it's just, like the medical mask, I guess. It's not one of these filtered ones, because we will get into the difference between vented masks and non-vented masks. But when we're talking about the ones where these disposable ones that everyone has, not the cloth, things like that, because I think there is going to be a difference, right, between a cloth mask, like the ones, I mean, I had three of these on, so this is really going to help me, right, because it's got to get through three levels of masks here. But a mask like this is going to be different than those medical masks.
So let me clarify. These are cloth masks. Even the medical masks that people are buying to wear, those are essentially cloth masks.
Okay.
So they're not filtered. They're not anything. They're a piece of cloth that is supposed to be more tightly woven, essentially, right?
You know, just to throw this out there, if you actually look at what's available in the stores that they're selling now, because at least here they're back in stock, you can go to the shelf and pull masks down. But if you read the box, it'll say does not provide protection for antibacterial, or is not antibacterial, antiviral.
Well, you know, and you're mentioning that.
What's the point?
Yeah, I wanted to bring this up earlier, because Anthony, yesterday you were at the store and you posted a picture of what the actual box says on it, and maybe it'd be good for folks to, because most people maybe not look at the box, but these a store display where they're selling the disposable masks for people, and yet it clearly said what it should and should not be used for. So what did it say on the box, the manufacturer?
Yeah, so this is literally the most common mask that is being sold out there. And it says this disclaimer on the back side of this box. This product is not to be used as, and it numbers several things. Number one, as a surgical mask to provide liquid barrier protection. Again, it says it right here. Masks that we use as doctors is for liquid barrier protection. It's not about aerosols. It never has been about aerosols. So let's be clear about that. Number two, in a clinical setting where the infection risk level through inhalation exposure is high. Number three, this product is not to be used for antimicrobial or antiviral protection or for infection prevention or reduction. Whoa.
Infection prevention or reduction.
Yeah. Mm. Not good for antimicrobial, antiviral protection. Number four, it's not to be used as a respiratory protective device. And number five, for high-risk aerosol-generating procedures. So this is the very mask that they're selling out to people. It's not the only one, but it's a major one. And they're all the same masks. This is the disclaimer that's coming on these boxes. So literally, people are wearing things thinking they're getting protected, and the box itself tells you, this does not protect you against these things.
So you've got right now, I think, I looked last night in anticipation of our conversation today. I think it was 33 states have mandated masks in some capacity. And the others may actually have metropolitan areas or particular counties that they're mandating. So this is widespread, regardless of what is on the back of the box there.
Okay, so let's deal with a couple things with that. First off, when we speak of the mandate, I think there's a difference we have to understand. Okay? Is there a mandate for people to wear masks? Or is it a mandate for stores to tell everyone to wear a mask? There is a difference, because in many of the states, they cannot mandate people wear a mask to the person, but they can threaten a business that doesn't have a sign. So there is a confusion that we end up seeing here, because in the states, at least in my state, they can't mandate people wear a mask, but everyone thinks they have, because every store is required to have a sign that says you must wear a mask. So the thinking is it's a state issued order. And yet what the state actually says very clearly in the law is that if you have a medical reason, then you do not need to wear a mask. And further, they can't ask you what that medical reason is. That's actually in the mandates. So the mandate is actually for stores to put it up. Now, we're going to get to this later, and I mentioned this last week on the Wrap Report, but the reason is fear. And we're going to get to that, because that's going to be a major thing. So, but I want to go with one other thing as well. Let me answer the mandates first, and then I want to go into different types of masks. So, what do you think about these mandates and why we see this universal?
Oh, I think it's fear mongering. Honestly, I think it's virtue signaling, and I think it's people that just don't have the knowledge base. I mean, here's the reality. I have friends across the country, doctors, dentists, and others, and nearly everybody thinks this is ridiculous. Based on the research that we have had since the early 80s, we have tons of research about masks. Why is it that there's just a few that are being put in front of cameras and making it sound like masks have protections for people? This is what's really, really puzzling. And then you've got politicians that have gotten involved. But I've said from the beginning on this, this was never about science. It has always been a political agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Because the policies have been political. You know, and we saw this bear out. We saw this bear out with the rioters. They're saying, well, rioting, you can't catch. You have at low risk for coronavirus. They're not worried about rioters, but you got to wear them when you're in stores.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, how does this work out? And that wasn't the only one. There's a number of things that we saw that clearly this is a political type agenda. Again, I just mentioned earlier about the smoke inhalation in the forest fires. These masks aren't going to stop the smoke from coming in your lungs. But yet viruses are much smaller, especially coronavirus,
which is not to say. And I don't think any of us will deny the fact that this is a legitimate disease. It's a legitimate threat. The problem is it's not nearly the threat that everybody said it was in March. We don't have millions of bodies stacking up in the street as a result of this plague. For those that have conditions maybe that predispose them to it to be lethal, and the elderly, it seems, are the ones that are most drastically affected by this, then you need to take some personal responsibility, be prudent, and do what makes sense. But you're right in think in assessing this political motive. They leapt on this.
Yeah, and I think we'll get to this more in a bit, but you're right in the sense that they were, you know, here's the epitome, right? Trump, there's video of Trump walking up. He's got a mask on. He walks up to a microphone. Before he gets the microphone, he takes the mask off. We don't see the microphone, I guess it's there. But, you know, the people are like 20 feet away from him. Okay? They're criticizing him because he takes the mask off to talk to the reporters.
Yeah.
Okay? But there's a video that was out there, probably taken down by now, where they had Biden walking up to a stage without a mask, but when he got on stage, he put it on. He was just as far from people. So right there, you see they're criticizing Trump for not wearing a mask when talking to reporters and trying to kill them, and Biden, who's clearly doing it for a show. I mean, because he was walking around without the mask, but it was when he got up to the stage, he's putting it on. And so right there, it's like, okay, he's when he's with the people, when he's around people, he wasn't wearing it. It was only when he was on camera, right?
Yeah.
So clearly, it's a political thing. And for the rioters and looters, it's a protection thing, not from COVID, okay? But I want to talk about different types of masks, Anthony, because there was something you had said that was interesting to me was when I had to travel, and now that, you know, you're getting flying again, and traveling and speaking at different events, the thing that got me was that they required a mask. But it couldn't be a mask like I had, which was a vented mask. They wanted one of these cloth ones that we have here that don't vent. And I thought that was silly because in my mind, the vented mask, which has a filter, would protect me better if there was COVID in the air versus a cloth mask that doesn't. And you had explained to me, and we had, you know, this come up yesterday in the store where someone actually admitted to this. What is the purpose for saying that we should not wear a vented mask, which would protect ourselves? What's the reason that people are, that we're hearing all these mandates and requiring cloth masks over, because when this first happened, Trump was talking all about the N95 mask. Everyone's trying to get an N95 mask. And now they're saying, no, you can't wear an N95 mask. You have to wear a cloth mask. Why do they make that difference?
Well, one is it blocks most of what you're breathing in, but it has no filter as you're breathing out. That's the way they're designed that way on purpose. But, you know, there's even another thing with the N95s is there's something called fit testing. Yeah. So anybody who understands masks you know, researchers.
You just said, yeah, and no one that's listening on the podcast knows what Bud just did. You got to read it.
He put his mask back on his face and said, repent. And it wasn't fit tested. No, you have to do something called fit test your masks. So I have friends that are EMS guys, and there are times that they're going to be in hazardous situations. They have to have... once a year, they have to be fit tested for N95 masks. So there's specific masks with specific seals that have to be used because all of our faces are different. All of our shapes are different. For an N95 mask to work, you have to have something that goes on your face and it has to seal all the way around. And if it doesn't seal, guess what happens? You breathe, and where does the air come out at? All around where the seal's not broken. I mean, this is no different than if you have a garden hose and you poke a hole in the side of it. Where's the water going to start coming out at? It's going to start shooting out the side. Well, if we don't have a mask on, and that's what's crazy, even these types of cloth masks, these don't actually lock onto our face.
Wait, put that on. We got to get the picture, the video.
Well, I'm not actually putting it on. I'm just pretending to.
Yeah, he just coughed in that.
Yeah.
I'm going to wash it.
But these don't actually seal on our skin. So we have air that's unfiltered being blown out the sides of our mask anyway. And even when you're wearing the so-called medical masks, as you're walking around grocery stores and whatnot, these aren't fitted to your face. They're blowing out the sides. They're blowing out the bottom through your chin. I mean, feel it. Start talking or breathing through these masks and start feeling around. And you'll see air coming out everywhere.
Okay, but the argument that would be made is that it's going to block some of it. It's going to reduce some of it. Now, they're trying to say, well, we got to stay 6 feet apart, social distancing, because that's how far if you have COVID and you sneeze or cough, the aerosol can travel that far before it falls to the ground. And so that's why the 6 feet distancing, and the mask is going to bring it down to 2 foot or 1 foot distancing is the argument. So we should wear masks so that if we have it, we're not spreading it as far.
Yeah, that's what they say. But again, we go back to the droplet issue that, yes, it can block droplets. It can block that type of heavy moisture until it dries, right? As we continue to breathe, so we cough, droplets get caught in the mask. We continue to breathe 15, 30, 45 seconds. It dries, and now the viruses are blown right back out. This is what's really interesting, too. This six-foot rule, do you recognize? Now, I got to tell everybody here, there is zero research that supports a 6 foot rule. There's nothing. There is also zero research that supports some of the stats you're hearing today, which is you're 65% less likely to catch coronavirus wearing a mask and 75% less likely if you and the other person is wearing a mask.
But I saw it on CNN. I mean, it's on the news.
Yeah, you know.
It wouldn't be fake news, would it?
Yeah, well, you know, we've all been asking for these double-blind placebo studies that have been done to test this. This science has not been done. They have not done research on this. I can also tell you, as a dentist, you can find these videos on YouTube, by the way. What they did is they simulated drilling on a patient. So water and all that kind of stuff. And what they're doing is this is part of OSHA in seeing what surfaces do we have to clean in a dental office to disinfect in between patients. And so as the patient's sitting there on the chair and you're doing drilling, what they did is they put red dye in, not that you can see, you can only see with a UV light, but they put a red dye into the drill water. So this is aerosolized stuff, same stuff that would be coming out of our lungs. And they were drilling on this dummy head. And when they got done drilling, just for a few minutes, they stopped the procedure. They shut off the lights, took out the black light to see where all the splatter went. It traveled 10 to 12 feet.
So you're saying we need 10 to 12 feet distance?
Yeah, I'm just saying don't tell anybody that.
No, yeah, 10 to 12 feet. But this is... But even then, that's only because you had walls stopping it. I mean, we had 10 to 12 feet where it's slamming up on walls to the point that you can detect it, which shows that how much an office is supposed to be disinfecting the surfaces between patients. Aerosols go a whole lot farther than 6 feet. Some evidence shows it might be 25 or 30 feet for aerosols.
So you're saying the science doesn't support the mask. There's another thing that you've talked about being with your background with the dentist office is that the way people clean surfaces are not doing anything as well. Because what we see people do in between every customer, you go to this food grocery store, they spray something on there and then immediately wipe it down. Right? And that's supposed to be to disinfect. Does that actually disinfect?
No. So let me tell you the process that we have to do in the dental office or in medical offices. Every bottle, if assuming they didn't put something, a different chemical into a different bottle to use, right? You're not supposed to do that with chemicals. It's against OSHA standards. So assuming that the chemical belongs to the bottle that it's in, every bottle is going to have what's called a kill time on it, which means that there's certain standards set that even tuberculosis, which is notoriously the hardest thing to kill on surfaces, we want to know what the TB kill time is. And whatever the TB kill time is, tuberculosis, we know that other things will be dead in the time it takes tuberculosis to be broken down and not be infectious. So every chemical has this. The fastest, quickest one on the market is ones that are made with pure hydrogen peroxide. Half a percent, 1% hydrogen peroxide. And it's put in a stable form in this bottle. That has a 1 minute kill time for TB as well as coronavirus and others. Most of the chemicals that are used, though, in industry are actually 3 to 7 minute kill times. Now, what does this mean? This is what you're supposed to be doing according to OSHA. And if you don't do this, your office can get fined and literally shut down. You have to spray your surfaces or wipe your surfaces, either one. You have to spray or wipe to remove any types of stuff you can see on the surfaces and stuff you can't see, right? You're wiping down all the macromolecules as you wipe everything down. After it's not really cleaning, but they call it, once you've cleaned the surface, once you've taken that first pass, you now have to go back over the surface a second time right away and either spray it all down and then leave it untouched for the kill time, or you have to wipe it and leave it wet for the kill time, which means that if your kill time is 5 minutes, and I guarantee you the stuff that is being used in stores like your Home Depots and whatnot is not the expensive 1 minute kill time stuff that I use in the dental office. They're using the 3, 5, 7 minute kill times, which means that for a surface to actually be disinfected, you have to spray it, wipe it, spray it, and then let it sit wet until the kill time is up. And then you can either wipe it down or just let it continue to evaporate.
Yeah.
That's the reality. That's not what's going on in any stores at all.
Okay, so then let's, after this break, what I want to do is I want to move to talking about some different things specifically. I'm thinking specifically of, you know, this thing we brought up earlier, a fear, why we think there is, why are the masks being put out there for us to, you know, to wear, what is behind all this. And then after that, we'll start to move to a biblical perspective right after this break. Unbelievers now have no excuse to misinterpret the Bible like they ever did. Interpreting the Bible has never been easier or less expensive. Get your copy of What Does It Mean to Me? This teaches and demonstrates the importance of biblical interpretation. Proper biblical interpretation is the difference between truth and error, life and death, heaven and hell. This is created for your sinners. That's your Christians in name only. Readers will stop asking, what does this mean to me? And start asking, what does it mean? Get your copy of What Does It Mean to Me at trackplanet.com or on amazon.com today. You want to get this before it's too late.
The good news is Striving for Eternity would love to come to your church to spend 2 days with your folks, teaching them biblical hermeneutics. That's right, the art and science of interpreting scripture. The bad news is somebody attending might be really upset to discover Jeremiah 29:11 should not be their life verse. To learn more, go to strivingforeternity.org to host a Bible interpretation made easy seminar in your area.
All right. And for those who are not patrons, those that are not supporting us on Patreon, you may want to, at least for this episode, to see, you know, Bud has found a good use for his mask as a decorative item. And so
that'll help.
That'll help. I'm telling you, yeah. That'll help. Yeah. That actually, you know, Bud, that will help because now it actually acts as a backdrop so that, you know, if you're in a room that is, you know, where you're recording and there's just nothing to absorb sound, that actually is a good, you may have something there that you could use the face masks to absorb sound instead of putting those foam cushions in front of the microphone to absorb. We should mark that. Folks, I'll have to just go become Patreons to see what you did.
make it your own.
Okay. So Anthony, let's talk about, we mentioned earlier this fear mongering, as you put it. I mentioned last week's episode on why I think that politically people started using these masks as a way to get fear, controlling people. This is something that it was interesting politically how almost overnight when we had Trump saying that, you know, and Dr. Fauci, by the way, like everyone wants to forget this, that it was Dr. Fauci that was saying masks aren't effective. And then, and Trump supporting that and claiming that, and as soon as Trump said it, all of a sudden, like overnight, every Democrat, every news agency, everyone had to wear a mask. In fact, we're even supposed to, and I saw this from a company that said that we're even supposed to wear masks like we're doing right now on a Zoom call, right? Because we're talking to Bud on Zoom. And I'm watching people in these Zoom meetings when they're in their home alone, and they got their mask on their face during a Zoom call with no one in the house. That is clearly not to protect. I mean, the coronavirus does not work through the airwaves to the electronics and pass through that way, through the internet, right? So requiring a mask when you're on a video call clearly has absolutely nothing to do with science. But you brought it up, I brought it up, fear. How are they using masks to instill fear in people?
Well, look, here's the reality, and I think we just need to speak out. Should a Christian fear death?
No,
right? We don't fear. Why? Because we know that we've got something better after this.
Christ to die as gain.
Yeah, that's right. So we don't have fear. We have to recognize first and foremost, fear is because people fear death. Most of this world unsaved, they fear death. Which should cause us to go out and preach the gospel more as Christians, well, right? That should be our response.
Well, I was going to say, and I know you've run into this because I've run into it, and you're far more faithful with regards to evangelism than I am. But when I run into people, they are legitimately afraid, non-believers, legitimately, and I don't try and absolve that. You need to be afraid, but here's what you need to be afraid of. It's not this disease. It would be what would happen if you die of this disease or a car accident when you leave your office. That's what you need to fear because you're going to face God. You're going to face judgment, and you have no hope, and you have no God.
Yep.
And give the gospel. So in that sense, it's been a great opportunity for evangelism.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of my favorite verses recently in evangelism has been, it is a Hebrews 10:31. It is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. So I can transition really fast about somebody's fear right into this verse. And of course, the verse before that says, "For we know him who said, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay.' And again, the Lord will judge his people. It is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God." You know, this gives us a wonderful segue into talking to somebody about spiritual matters, what they're truly afraid of. They're not afraid of coronavirus. They're afraid of the results of, or potential results of coronavirus. Yeah, that's exactly. The bottom line as we talk about fear.
But the thing that I've noticed is with this whole fake pandemic, which it is, because when you look at what a pandemic is and you look at the actual numbers of people who are getting this and dying from this, it's not at the pandemic level. It is a disease that's affecting the world, but it's not a pandemic as they originally predicted. So,
and just to clarify, right? The virus is real.
Yes.
But what we're claiming it's capable of doing is not.
Yeah. And the fear that people are having is that because people are using this virus to drive fear, what's happening is that they're providing basically a false narrative for this so that they could drive the fear for political purposes, in my mind, and we'll get to that. But they're using it, not looking at the science. Mm-hmm. Okay, because there aren't enough. There's not enough results that we see in people dying that this is some pandemic. But yet we saw how people are using this to shame other people. We had this at the store where a woman was upset with someone for not wearing a mask, and even said. Because the person says, well, I have a health condition, which they do. You know, by the way, I was going to mention this earlier. You know, when I had to go into the doctor's office, the hospital, for something, they require you to wear a mask. Well, they went to take my blood oxygen level. Now they had a problem. The mask was restricting my breathing. I was breathing carbon dioxide, not oxygen, and I almost got to dangerous levels. Okay, I was at 96%, and 95 is where they start having concern. So me wearing a mask restricts my breathing and breathing that carbon dioxide can actually put me in an unhealthy condition. So I can't wear a mask. This other person is a similar situation. And you had someone that actually turned and said, well, you're not supposed to wear, because they were like, well, I can't wear a mask because of a health condition. It was, well, you're not wearing the mask to protect yourself. You're supposed to wear it to protect me. Right? And that is the problem. They think the mask is going to protect them. You wearing a mask, the mask you're wearing doesn't protect you, but somehow someone else wearing a mask is going to protect you when it's not protecting them. Like, it just shows the nonsense of it. And it's clearly not, they even, when that person's saying that, they recognize that the mask they're wearing does not protect them, which is a question you always ask people when they say, do you have a mask? And you usually say, does your mask work? And when they say yes, you go, okay, then you're fine, right? Yeah. And if they say no, you say, then you should take it off.
Right? Yeah, what are you wearing it for anyway?
Or the other thing you've been doing where someone points to the mask, and what do you say then?
I say, it's blue. Somebody who did that to me yesterday, virtue signaled, she's pointing like this. I go, it's blue. And she started laughing.
So the mask is being said that it's to protect others. And this is the reason I was given on the flight of why I should wear a non-vented mask, was to protect others. But if the mask I'm wearing doesn't protect me, how is the mask I'm wearing going to protect others? Well, it's not. So it just seems amazing that overnight they went to, well, everyone's got to wear a mask. How is this notion of wearing a mask, how do we see that being used to control people?
Well, again, it's fear. I mean, think about this. We've literally woken up one day in bizarro world where everybody's walking around with face coverings. And as the numbers have come out, Bud, you said it earlier. Originally, we had numbers that were touting millions of people were going to die from coronavirus early on.
Right?
Tens of millions, if not half the country, is going to be infected pretty quickly, the way they were saying it. They were talking about how you can catch it it could live on surfaces for 3 days. Nonsense, by the way. It could live on surfaces for 3 days. It could live in the air for days. All kinds of stuff. And the governors and president to a degree all kept saying the whole thing we need to do is just flatten the curve. The reason why we're going to have all kinds of deaths, that they were predicting deaths, is because of a fast spread of the virus, more so than what the hospitals could handle. So the hospitals were going to be overloaded. They wouldn't be able to treat patients, and we get lots and lots of deaths. So in the meantime, you've got hospitals, temporary hospitals that are being built in New York City and in other areas by the military and National Guard to be able to have extra beds when needed. And what ends up happening? Within just a few weeks of this all starting, I have friends who are getting laid off around the country, nurses and doctors, because their hospitals, all of a sudden, they don't have the regular work they're doing, and they're not getting the coronavirus patients they were anticipating. Yeah, infections were rising, but the reality is that within 3.5 to 4 weeks after all of this process started, so to speak, the curve had already been flattened. So the very reason why people were to be cautious, the reason why they shut down the economy, shut down the country, was to make sure the hospitals wouldn't get overloaded. Well, we found out pretty quickly it wasn't going to happen. That we had plenty of room.
Well, the thing there is that, and you hit on it, when we started this, you know, 14 days to slow the spread, that's exactly what it was. It was to slow the spread. Mm-hmm. It was not a cure. Now everyone's arguing this is a cure. I mean, the thing that gets me is you look at places like Hong Kong and China and Japan where wearing a face covering ever since SARS became commonplace. And yet they also are suffering with COVID. Now, if the majority of people are wearing masks, then they should have been protected. And yet it spread there as well with lots of people wearing a mask. And guess what? It spread in some of those places even faster than America. When you look at it per million, and that's the one thing they never want to do. Yeah, they don't want to look at per million, right? Because China probably has way more than America, but they're not giving those numbers. We're doing far more testing, so we have better numbers than anybody, but we also have more people than most of the other countries. So when you look at per million, the United States infection rate with COVID, we're like 10 in the world. When you look at death rate, we're like 11 in the world. So it's just that we have more people. So you got to look at it as an apples to apples per million. When you do so, you realize that these other countries where wearing a face covering is common did not protect them any more than it did here in America. They had just as many people get it, or not, if not more. They had people who died from it, if not more. So when we look at the masks, I just go, okay, let's just use common sense here and realize this is not the supporting a mandate. But it does support controlling a population.
You know, it's interesting when you actually look at the raw numbers about, okay, so the curve was flattened. It was flattened early. They should have started to open up the country. They didn't. They kept moving the goalposts, right? They kept changing their supposed end game. But as time has gone on, we have looked at numbers, like in the state of Ohio where I reside. And as of, it was either beginning of June or beginning of July, they looked at the total number of deaths in Ohio this year versus the last 5 years. And guess what? Did it go up significantly? Nope.
No, well, the fact is you see these reports about higher numbers of positive tests. Okay, that's a good thing, because what does that mean? The actual fatality rate is getting much, much, much lower.
Yeah, that's right. So, and part of the issue, too, is, as we've seen with the fear-mongering, is as states have increased their antibody testing, which means that you had it at some point. You may never even gotten sick because your God-given immune system actually worked the way it was supposed to work. You didn't get sick, but you still test for it. And they were adding those to the numbers. So when Arizona supposedly had their flare-up back in late June, early July, and Florida had their flare-up, it wasn't new coronavirus cases and more people getting sick again. It was the antibody testing that they're now adding to the rolls, the number of people who had coronavirus.
Right.
So, yeah, it's been really disturbing. One of the things that's been interesting, too, is that they looked at numbers of total deaths in Ohio. I don't know about the United States, but in Ohio, up until about a month ago, and not only is it negligible in terms of difference between previous years, but it appears now that there's less deaths this year than there were last year.
Well, I think Ohio is one of those states that has a mask mandate, so that has probably helped you guys. That's what did it.
Yeah, that's what they would like to tell us, right? You recognize in Ohio, and this is funny. I mean, you go to the big cities and, you know, granted, I'm one of the few people that are walking around with no mask on. I haven't worn a mask since day one walking into places.
You rebellious.
I'm rebellious. No, I just don't want to lie. So I walk around without a mask. But you know what? Once you get out of the big city and you get into suburbs and you get into some more rural areas, nobody's wearing masks. Nobody has them on. This is only in big city areas where you see people doing it. So,
okay. So you brought this up. You said you don't want to tell a lie. So does wearing a mask promote a lie?
I believe it does, because that means I'm buying into the narrative in what the government and some guy, some scientist in front of cameras are saying. They're saying that these protect you. I know better. They don't. So I'm not going to stay. I'm not going to lie by wearing a mask on my face. And I'm not going. And it goes hand in hand, really, with fear, because that's the other part of it. Right? Part of this is a scientific response for people to see, and we recognize they're unbelievers, so they're not going to see it the way we do as believers. But the other half of it is I'm not going to live in fear either.
Okay, so after this break, what I want to do is let's talk about a biblical perspective. We understand the science, not supporting it. And we know we're going to go a little bit longer here today, folks, but we wanted to give you guys some of the science behind it, because that's what's being attacked. That's what we're being told we're ignorant on. It's strange that it's the Christians using science and the politicians using the words. So we know who's giving lip service and who has data. But after this break, I want to talk about the biblical ramifications and biblical arguments.
The Christian podcast community is a cohesive group of like-minded Christian podcasters proclaiming the truths of Christ with expertise and passion in the areas of theology, church history, Christian living, evangelism, apologetics, parenting, homeschooling, sermons, and much, much more. So check us out at ChristianPodcastCommunity.org. ChristianPodcastCommunity.org. One stop for all your favorite Christian podcasts.
Two great books and one website. Visit strivingforeternity.org. There are two books that I would like to recommend you purchase. What they, meaning people who aren't Christians, other religions believe, and what we believe. Systematic Theology Made Simple. Both are great resources, especially if you plan on witnessing to somebody. strivingforeternity.org.
All right, so as we come back, what I want to do is, I want to play something from Alistair Begg, and that might set the stage. I did want to ask you a question. I'm afraid this, but I think that if I ask this next question, you brought it up in the chat. I was going to ask this, but since you put it in the chat, I now have to mention it. This may be a whole nother show. You mentioned masks today, vaccines tomorrow, mark of the beast later, conditioning, okay? One of the questions I wanted to ask, and I know Dr. Silvestro's position on this, so I know it's going to be a long one, so that's why I didn't ask it, but now we have to. So really quick, Anthony, are vaccines going to be a magic bullet to solve this?
No, and we are. So I'm going to say this.
Here we go.
Dr. Sherry Tenpenny is a good friend of mine from the Cleveland area. She is a world known researcher, world known holistic doctor. She's a medical doctor, trained medical doctor for years, went into the holistic side of things. If you read anything on vaccinations or against vaccinations, her name will be mentioned somewhere in the paper or somewhere in the research. And we are going to have her on in some shows here in the near future.
On the Apologetics Live.
On Apologetics Live. Yeah.
Maybe I'll have her here.
Yeah, or maybe here too. Yeah. To walk through some of these issues. There's a whole lot with vaccinations. I'm not going to get into all of it today of the harm that many of them cause. But I will tell you this.
Because unlike when you do Apologetics Live for me, and you do like a five-hour show, which is supposed to be a two-hour show, we're already, you notice this, bud. He comes on, every show he comes on goes long. He just,
It's not my fault. Like in Apologetics Live, you have people in the comments who are like, hey, let's go a little longer. I'm like, okay, we're going to go a little longer 3 hours later. But no, in all seriousness, there is the type of virus that coronavirus is, they don't work well in vaccinations. And what you're not going to listen, what you're not going to hear unless you start going onto different websites to see the people that have been harmed by these types of, specifically this type of vaccine for this type of virus. Gardasil has been a vaccine that's been out there for several years. It's supposed to be for females. It's given to males too for HPV, because if you prevent HPV, you will also prevent the cervical cancers and oral cancers that can be caused by HPV. So they've been giving Gardasil vaccines to people once they become of what secular people call the sexual age, you know, teenage years. And there has been a path of destruction left with the original Gardasil vaccines. Women, athletes across the country given it to them in teenage years that are paralyzed, some from the waist down, others who have muscle issues, muscle control issues. There's a decent percentage, and I'm not saying 50%. I'm saying like 5% of women who have gotten this have had major permanent ill effects from this type of vaccination. The same thing is going to happen if we rush a vaccine. Mm-hmm. First of all, I'm never taking it, but if we rush a vaccine for the same type of virus,
we don't know what's in this.
Trouble.
Yeah. So let's share this from Alistair Begg. Bud, you had sent this, so let's interact with this.
Well, here I am, all masked up, and trying to make sure that I am obeying the rules and paying attention, but it's really pretty difficult. I wanted to let you know that I, along with everyone else, have been trying my best to make sure that I don't invade other people's privacy or dishearten them in any way. But we've really developed a couple of distinct parties, the mask party and the non-mask party. And I was saying to our pastoral team the other day that Romans 14, I think, is a bit of a help in this, insofar as the people that Paul is addressing were equally committed to Jesus and they were strong in their faith, and yet he describes some as weak and some as strong. And the issue there, again, is not a matter of their spiritual stability, but it is their perspective on things, debatable matters. In the case of Romans 14, diets and special days. And I think there are some principles that apply as we try and navigate these strange waters now. And I think that Paul's advice earlier than chapter 14, where I think it's in chapter 12, he says, inasmuch as it is possible for you, try to live in peace with one another. So as we think of being back in one another's company, let's pay heed to that. And let's not judge one another, but prefer one another in love.
Okay, so let's deal with what he's saying there, because, you know, it was interesting because he's talking about masks, not masks. Is this a privacy issue? Like that was, I didn't know how that worked in. How is this privacy? I didn't get that one, but let us deal with a biblical argument for this. He brings up Romans 14. Romans 14 deals with the idea of eating things that were offered unto idols, eating things that could cause someone else to stumble, eating things that would cause you to stumble. In other words, sinning against your conscience. I'll say this, and then Bud and Anthony, get your feedback. But I think if there is someone who believes that them not wearing a mask is a sin, in other words, if they're believing that they're protecting their neighbor, because that's how a lot of people are using it, is Alistair used it in a different way of privacy. I don't get that one, but I understand people that use the argument saying this is to love my neighbor. But you know, there becomes a whole lot in that. And is this really showing love to a neighbor? I know, Anthony, you're going to probably get into the fact that showing love to your neighbor is to not lie to them and cause them to be in fear, because that's what wearing a mask is doing. It is driving people to be afraid of something that they don't need to be afraid of, with the level of fear that we have. We don't fear the flu. We know we're going to get sick. And you see with even President Trump, 3 days later, he's symptom free. Okay, now granted, he, I'm sure, got the best medicine and all that, but then make that available and then we can go on with life. But what I end up seeing with it is, first off, if someone thinks they're in sin by not wearing a mask, then don't sin against your conscience. I'll say the same thing the other way as well. If someone thinks it's a sin to wear a mask, they shouldn't be encouraged to wear a mask. And I think that's what Alistair was trying to say, is we shouldn't be judging one another. In our church, I don't know about Bud for your church and Anthony for yours, but in our church, we don't have a requirement for wearing a mask. We have a set of seats in the center where people that don't care to social distance, don't care to wear a mask, they sit there. We have seats on the wings where anybody who comes in with a mask, we encourage them to sit there, because if they're wearing a mask, they're showing that they have concern. We've instructed folks that if you see someone with a mask, you keep some distance there, because it's showing respect to that person. And so we've set church up so that those that want to wear masks, they could be there protected, no one judges them. Those that want to wear a mask or don't want to wear a mask, they can all sit together. But this is the thing I would be looking at. You know, is this an issue where you have a stronger brother and a weaker brother, and you don't want to put a temptation for them to stumble in front of them? He's using an argument, but I think this is the best that they can come up with. There's not some clear passage that's going to answer this question, but we have principles that we could use. So, with that as a backdrop, you know, Bud, I'll start off with you because you've been kind of quiet today.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Anthony was complaining during the break. You know, we gotta let Bud speak.
I felt bad.
Is this going to be 5 hours? I'm going to have to leave with my wife.
Yeah, this is the Bud brief.
I think that the issues are very complicated when you move it into the realm of what does it look like for me to be faithful. You have churches that in sort of an appeal to Romans 13, and they have a mayor or they have some edict from the governing authorities that have said you've got to do this. You can still meet, and in Florida we've been pretty well able to continue meeting. But certain counties have requirements that you got to wear masks. So, you know, a church has chosen, the elders have determined, we're going to do this. We're going to require masking and provide, like you're doing, Andrew, for social distancing. But they're also requiring masks. So a believer in that church who is required to submit to the elders, we don't suspect anything nefarious. They've got noble motives. How do you counsel somebody in that situation who they may be opposed to the mask? And not only that, they may also have a medical condition. Maybe they're asthmatic. They can't, you know, wear that. What does it look like for them to be faithful within the body of the local church? So you have an appeal to a Romans 13 situation. You have an appeal to the royal law, love your neighbor. And then you also have an issue of Christian liberty, which I'm concerned that in some of the conversations I've had, we are really easily capable of confusing our constitutional liberties with what our Christian liberties are. So that's another issue. So it's very convoluted, but the person who's in a church, their elders have decided you've got to wear masks. They don't want to. What do you tell them?
Anthony, you're the guest.
Wait, say this question again, Bud. I want to make sure I heard it clearly.
So a church, the elders have determined they're going to wear masks.
We're gonna wear them.
The local government has said you've got to mask up. So they're going to do that in the worship service. You can't come unless you're masked.
So in other words.
And an individual has a problem with that. That's a member of the church. They want to be faithful. What should they do?
And let me ask this as a broader question. Is not wearing a mask a violation of obedience to your government in Romans 13?
Yeah. So, you know, I did a Facebook live video on this back in April, and in where do rights come from for people? Because, I don't think a Christian does any good service if we are mixing what you just said, Bud, if we're mixing our Christian rights with constitutional rights. But I think the thing we have to make sure we understand is that our constitutional rights, at least as we read in the Declaration of Independence and our Constitution, is based off of a correct understanding, a biblical understanding that our rights come from God, Creator God.
Right.
And so from a secular perspective, when people are saying we have to follow Romans 13 or 1 Peter 2, right? Those are the other verses that talk about this. Yeah. And I would dispute people on on some of the interpretations out there. But here's the thing. If you're going to be submissive to the government at all costs, which, again, I don't think is a biblical position, but if you're going to be submissive to the government at all costs, which part of the government do you listen to? What is the law of the land, our Constitution and Bill of Rights, or these mandates that do not have the ability, even if you pass them into law, to supersede the Constitution of the land? See, even I think that even when people try to use the Romans 13 argument, it fails. Because ultimately, our Constitution trumps any law that anybody could ever make in this country. So that's one major problem. I think that any type of pastors that would make that type of mandate, we need to talk to them. I think they need to recognize their error in their ways, because again, from a constitutional perspective, that's a problem. Now, of course, I make the argument in Romans 13, 1 Peter 2, that we see, yes, we're to be submissive to government, but at the very same time that we're supposed to be submissive to government, God also says that the government is a servant of God, whose responsibility is to punish the wicked and allow the good to continue. I'm paraphrasing, mm-hmm. of course. But this is what the government's responsibility is. When they are not carrying out that responsibility, we have now a responsibility to reject what the government says and follow God. Now, where that fine line sits, we can debate. But I do see that dichotomy there that has to be dealt with. And I've seen way too many people from the beginning of this just say, bow down to government, bow down to government, bow down to government, without really thinking through this at all. And unfortunately, a lot of pastors have done this as well. When it comes to Alistair Begg, I'm very disappointed with his response, by the way, in throughout this entire process. I live in a suburb of Cleveland. I could drive east 45 minutes and attend Alistair Begg's church, or I could attend the church I attend, which is 25 minutes west, and it's a small Reformed Baptist church. So I could go to either one. We live under the same so-called so-called mandates in Ohio, same governor, same area of town in the Cleveland suburbs. So we live under the same rule. Why is it that some churches didn't close at all? Some Baptist churches, they just kind of went under the radar and didn't close. Why is it some churches like ours said, you know what, let's give the benefit of the doubt. Let's close for a few weeks. Let's see what happens. And once we recognize that this was tomfoolery, especially with the whole flattening of the curve and seeing that they didn't really care about flattening of the curve, right? The curve was flattened, and they still wanted to hammer down more on Ohioans. Our church and many other small churches decided to open. We went through Romans 13, Romans 14. Our elders put out a statement regarding their view on these passages. And that in Romans 14, look, yes, if you want to wear a mask, wear a mask. If you don't want to wear a mask, don't wear a mask. Don't violate your conscience. We have areas of the church that are sectioned off that if you don't want to be around people, you want to maintain a social distance, here are places you can sit where people without masks, they won't sit there. So we've established all those things. I'm just disappointed a guy of the stature and clout as Alistair Begg took 5 months longer to come to that decision than a lot of faithful small church pastors have done across the country.
Yeah, and I think the thing is that you see a lot of these well-known preachers, pastors, who are criticizing people while they're saying not to judge, and yet they were being critical of people who were saying, you know what, we want to keep meeting. And so, I do have some concern there as well.
Yeah. And I will say this. I mean, I was really, really hoping for MacArthur to open early. I was disappointed that he didn't. I was disappointed it took so long. The thing I have learned through this process, though, is John MacArthur, he played everybody. I mean, he was a chess master. He and his elders were a chess master in how they handled the situation, because they literally gave all the grace they could possibly humanly give, to the point of being completely above reproach in how they handled the governor and handled the situation in California for months. Literally blameless. And while they did this, they got all their ducks in order behind the scenes with the federal judges that are elders and attend church at his church, the sheriffs that attend at his church, all the people of power. He got all that stuff in line, everybody on board, ready to go, including a phone call from President Trump that we all knew about several weeks before he actually said it out loud to mainstream people. He methodically got this all done in order so that when he came out, he was ready. And so a couple weeks ago when the court came out with another ruling saying, oh, you need to close, and I have people calling me asking me, so do you think MacArthur's going to close this Sunday? You think he's going to close again? I'm like, no way. He's in this. He's so in this right now because he spent all this time preparing getting an order. And I think what MacArthur did is vastly different than Alistair Begg did, who just didn't bother opening because he was kowtowing to the fear-mongering going on.
And the way that MacArthur did this, with the way he opened, one, it became national news. Two, it became an encouragement for other churches, which is why he did it the way he did it. But there is a difference. There are other churches that tried to open up and got, you know, in trouble with the government, and they have lawsuits, and they lost because of their arguments. What is MacArthur's argument? His argument is not against the health issues or the mandates. Mm. He's actually arguing for the Constitution.
Yep.
Yeah. That's the First Amendment.
Correct.
Yep. Yeah.
He's arguing with the Constitution, and that is what's making it difficult, because the way they laid out the argument, the government cannot go against their own Constitution. It's in the Constitution. We have the right to assemble. And that argument is one that they're having a hard time with. And because of this will then set the precedent where every other church can argue to open up based on the First Amendment. And one by one, they're going to fall. We're already seeing governors where the Supreme Courts, the state Supreme Courts, are overruling these mandates that they're saying they're too far reaching. They don't have the authority to do these things. I think these things are going to continue. But when we look at this biblically, oh, it looks like you were gonna say something before.
Yeah, I just wanted to read the First Amendment for people, because this is what MacArthur is using. Here's the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or of the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievance. That's literally the language of the First Amendment. So this is what MacArthur's going towards, is this proper understanding of what the rule of the land actually is. But here's what's even more interesting about this, is at the same time that California and Governor Newsom are banning churches, they are allowing, under the same clause, the homosexuals to gather together in their parades in June and July. They're allowing BLM to gather and what they were calling peaceably assemble. We know it wasn't peaceable, but
haven't you heard the news that they were peaceful? Trump was sending people in to do rioting and looting to make it look like they weren't peaceful. That was all Trump. Don't you know that?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I mean, even though they were saying the rioting and looting was for reparations.
Right, yeah. but that's a big problem, because you look at the First Amendment of the Constitution, and you're allowing rioters and looters and people to, when they say peaceably protest or peaceably assemble, well, you know what? The religious argument is the exact same amendments.
Well, and this is the thing. I think this is where a lot of people said enough is enough. When churches weren't allowed to open, when you're being told you can't worship God indoors, outdoors, you're not allowed to sing, all these rules. I mean, outdoors, you had to be distanced and limited to 10% of the people outside, things like this. And yet you can have people by the thousands gathering on the streets, shoulder to shoulder, setting things on fire, throwing stones at police and all of that. The hypocrisy, I think, is what ended it for most people. But the issue I think we do have to end on is this idea that although we may be of the position that masks scientifically are not going to support you, they're not going to protect you, we do have to be aware biblically that there are some who are following the news and are getting all afraid. For them, we would want to encourage them that for the Christian, we don't fear death. We shouldn't be fearing these things. does that mean we don't protect ourselves? No, protect yourself. But if the mask is not protection, then why do it? If you're if you're helping the government to instill fear against, you know, the church, because that's what they really want to come against. You were seeing that, especially in California. But why would we want to further a lie? Why would we want to further instill fear in people? But if it comes to our fellow brother and sister, if they have that fear, we don't just say, grow up. We need to disciple them. But it starts with doing things that won't cause your brother to stumble. So yeah. We want to educate them. We're just not just tell them to get over it. We need to educate them, which is what I hope this show is doing, is to give some of the science. That's why I wanted to talk with Dr. Silvestro. So you have the science, you have the understanding. But then biblically, we need to stand up, because if we don't stand up now, we're not going to be able to stand up later when they further it. You know, it really is like Bud was saying, the masks today, vaccines tomorrow, mark of the beast after that. It really is. Because this is all conditioning. This is only phase one, folks. Do not think that those that are the anti-Godders in this world who want to control, the Marxists, do not think that this is the end of this. This is only the trial run. They're watching this to see how they can more effectively control a mass of people. They're going to find another way to use fear. So this pandemic, which isn't really a pandemic, we're going to see another pandemic that's not a pandemic, I'm sure, somewhat soon when it's convenient for them. And they're learning how to use fear to control people, to get not only their way, but to silence God's people. If you're noticing, there's across the country, it's only two groups of religious people that are not, they're being told they can't worship. I mean, I find this very interesting. I'll go to New York for the example. Resurrection Sunday came about. Churches can't be open. They were warned, you cannot have church open. They're going to arrest people, all this. Most recently in New York, just this week, you're seeing protests in New York, which somehow those protests have to be immediately stopped. The police are coming in and stopping it right away. Why? Because you have a lot of Jewish people that are being restricted for the Jewish holidays, and they're being told they cannot serve their God. Okay, they're not allowed to worship on a holiday. But when it was Ramadan, you know what New York did? Ramadan not only set up like 70, 75 places where they could get halal food, the city, what happened to separation of church and state? The city provided food. They can cook in their homes. They didn't need, I mean, there's no other restaurants, but they provided food. They even went into the mosques. The mayor went into the mosque to mark out where people can kneel and pray that's far enough apart. Wait a minute. The churches can't gather. The synagogues can't gather. But the Muslims, the city was coming in and helping them. So this is not a cross-the-board thing. This is clearly targeted to specific religious groups. That is, and so this is, I think, an issue where Christians do need to stand up and say, enough is enough. Kind of like MacArthur did. Say, look, we've tried to do all we can to honor the government, to love our neighbor, but at this point, this is something else. Now this is something where it is more than just our religious freedoms. It is the controlling of people for a system of government that wants to end Christianity. And we need to stand up now. Anthony, any last words you have?
No, I think you guys have said this best. This is literally a test run for what else the Marxists want to do in this country. I think they've known that fear is the way to be able to control people the quickest, and to watch how many people folded so fast and for so long has given them an unbelievable blueprint to do exactly what they want to do in the coming years.
Bud, any last comments from you?
No, I would just say we have to recognize that there is a spiritual side to this, and we have a sovereign God who is, for his glory, for our good, those that love him, allowing this to go on. And there may be watershed moments that come along, like I think MacArthur and that whole situation could be, that we need to be very keen about and be in prayer for those things, because we have an enemy And he is the God of this world, and our Lord is allowing all of this to go on. And we need to prayerfully and biblically consider what's it look like for us to be faithful through the midst of this and continue proclaiming the gospel. But I would just mention, I'm still, you know, that verse, I think, from the Message Bible in Exodus, thou shalt not covet.
I think you meant cover, right?
Covet, not COVID. Never mind.
Yeah.
My bad.
Well, you know, here's what we want to do in closing out. We're going to be done, Bud. This is a wrap for the Wrap Report. However, I did do an interview, and I want to play that interview now on about a conference that is coming up shortly. Okay, so I'm here today with a fella who is running the Cruciform Conference. Now, you may not have heard about this. Why haven't you? You should have been paying attention. But in case you didn't, we're going to talk about a conference that's put on by Cruciform Ministries. Brandon, how are you today?
I'm good. I'm very good.
Yeah, there are some people, I don't know why, that haven't heard of this conference. I don't know why. They got to start paying more attention, huh?
I agree.
Because you got quite a lineup here of speakers. And before we get to that, let's talk first about the conference, its goals, its mission, and then get into this year's topic and some of the topics, some of the speakers. So why did you create this conference?
I created this conference, namely, to help Indianapolis, Indiana. There's, at the risk of offending a ton of people, I'll say it, there's just not a lot of good churches that preach a lot of solid doctrine here. And so I thought to myself, how can I get people at least somewhat excited about the Bible? Our churches here love programs, events, so on. And it seemed wise to me to start a conference in order to get good doctrine into the city. And so last year was our first year, and I wound up just asking some friends if they would come and teach the Bible for a couple of days. It's turned into a yearly thing, and I don't know how long it will last, but it's been fun so far, and friends have been gracious to help out, and then new friends that I make have been eager to jump in and help as well. That's the primary reason I started it.
So tell me about Cruciform Ministries. What is it that you guys do? What is the goal of it?
Cruciform Ministries exists to equip disciples of Jesus with the gospel of Jesus. And primarily we do that through conferences right now. And we have some online conferences. We've done one on abortion. We've done one on how to read your Bible. My friend Kofi, which is really cool. He did like a little 3-day seminar. He will not be back this year, but he will be back next year, he says. So he's a good guy.
He is.
And then we have another one coming up in December, which might be somewhat polarizing to people on post-millennialism. So
for or against?
It's going to be pro post-millennialism. But we also plan to, and I've talked to some friends who shall remain nameless at this point, doing one on amillennialism. So not everybody on the Cruciform team shares the same eschatology. So we try to play nice.
Well, you know, you should do one on pro-millennialism. If there's a millennium, we're all for it.
Yeah.
There you go. So
that's the first time I've heard an eschatology joke that wasn't just super cliche. I haven't heard that one before, so you get two thumbs up for that one. Usually people do the
pan-millennial, which is why I don't like the things that everyone does. Let's just talk about the conference itself. The motivation for this conference is very similar to why Striving for Training started our EQIP conferences. We used to be our Spreading the Fire conferences across the country was the same thing, same motivation to disciple, to be able, but we were more on, we wanted to train people up, and because we didn't see a lot of good churches, train people up and then get them out on the streets evangelizing. So we used to have the conference really to gather people together so we had people to go evangelize with. But it is a problem in a lot of areas where churches are, well, they've gone the way of the world, I guess is the easiest way to say it, which really leads us into the topic for this year's conference. It's very different than the way of the world, and not one that many people want to talk about or have a conference on. So what's this year's topic at the Groups Forum Conference?
It's going to be on holiness, the holiness of God, our holiness and discipleship, and then all these different kinds of, we're just going to attack holiness from a myriad of different angles.
In God's case, he's holy, he's separate from sin. There's a whole lot of ways we can explain this. There is the fact that we have to live holy. This is something the world doesn't want to talk about, especially most of the churches. I mean, a lot of the churches, what they want to talk about is Jesus is your friend. Have a relationship with him. Mm-hmm. Isn't he so nice? You know, he just wants everything for you. I mean, holiness kind of flies in the face of all that.
Absolutely.
So who do you have coming? Who are some of the speakers? And then we'll get into dates and location.
Yeah, so God willing, our lineup is Justin Peters, your friend, Anthony Mathenia, Jeffrey Johnson, Gabe Hughes. So maybe I should slow down. So in case you don't know, Justin Peters does the Clouds Without Water seminars and many other things. And I'm sure people are pretty aware of his ministry with John MacArthur and guys out there in California. And Anthony Mathenia does the Media Gratia videos. The Behold Your God stuff. He also pastors Christ Church, Radford. And then we have Jeffrey Johnson, who runs Free Grace Press, as well as Grace Bible Theological Seminary, and pastors Grace Church in Conway, Arkansas. Then you have the When We Understand the Text individual named Gabe Hughes. Justin Huffman, a pastor in Canada, but we won't hold that against him. Cole Dikey, who is a church planter in Iowa, who is just a young, fiery preacher that everybody should listen to for sure. You can go back and listen to, if you are a pastor or a preacher, or you aspire to be so, his talk is going to be on holiness in the preacher and preaching. So it's going to be good. And then Russell St. John, many people might not know who he is, but he is actually a pastor in St. Louis, Missouri. He was my pastor actually while I was in seminary. And he is probably one of the best preachers I've ever heard. So he will bless everyone for sure. And then we have, of course, myself, Jonathan Hayashi, Chris Huff, and then we have a few guys doing some breakouts. Dwayne from the Bar podcast to be one. And then my favorite breakout speaker, besides you, of course, to talk about is Michelle Leslie. So she's going to come and she's going to do both days. She's been with us since day one, and she sets up shop and does talks for the women both days, and women only. She refuses to let men in there for good reason. So it's going to be a good time. And then, of course, you've signed up to help us out as well.
Yeah, that was something we kind of worked out more last minute. I hadn't been doing too many speaking events. COVID, everything got shut down, and I had some things going on in my church that required attention. So I had stopped speaking events until we could work through that. I talked about that on my podcast. So let's talk about the dates, location, how people can get more information about this.
Yeah, to get more information, you can go to cruciformministries.org. That's the slow way with many steps, but you could just go to cruciformconference.com, and then you can click the get tickets. So the price is going to be varied as of right now. They are still on early bird prices, but we will shoot that up at some point. The dates are October 23rd and 24th, with a pre-conference being on the 22nd on the sanctity of human life or abortion. And it's going to be in Indianapolis, Indiana, at the church that I pastor, New Hope Church, which is 2240 East 106th Street in Carmel, Indiana.
Yeah, so this is going to be, it's coming up quick, so get in your cars if you don't want to fly with a mask on.
And just start driving.
Yeah. this new way of travel. I mean, one thing that I know I've been getting asked a lot, do I have to wear a mask? Do I have to be social distance from everybody? So for folks who are thinking about coming, this is a big question nowadays. What are we going to do with that?
Well, we are not going to be requiring masks or demanding that people stand on dots in order to stay away from people. However, we are going to be responsible, and we will have hand sanitizer in many places. We will be keeping the place clean. And so we're going to be very cognizant, you know, there being an illness about. However, we're not going to get super worked up about it. Our church specifically, the congregation that I lead, we never closed our doors. Now, that doesn't mean that every single person came all the time, but we have refrained from shutting our doors because the church is in fact essential. And so, you know, we don't get too worked up about it over at New Hope, and we hope that that's not alarming to other people.
The dates again are going to be October 23rd and 24th. This is going to be in Carmel, Indiana. If you're flying in, you can fly into Indianapolis. You can go to Cruciform. So that's CRUCIFORM ministries.org. And if you go there, you're going to see the conference. I know you gave them the Cruciform conference website, but the reason I want you guys to go to Cruciform Ministries website is so that you can see the other conferences that they're putting together. So this, the one on holiness, the Cruciform conference on holiness, October 23rd, 24th. You can go check that out, but they also have the Purchase Victory Conference coming up in December that was mentioned, some other conferences that you'll see coming up on there. So you want to get in touch with that, with this ministry, with this website, so you could track more of the events they got going on. I hope to see everyone there at the Cruciform Conference this October, which is coming up soon. You got all the planning done. There's nothing left for you to do, right?
Yeah. There's always stuff popping up that I got to deal with and different things like that.
Welcome to conference planning.
Yeah. So
give folks an encouraging word. Why should they come?
I would primarily say it'll just be an edifying time. I mean, we've been cooped up in our house for the better part of a year. Now is a time where I think we're starting to get our feet back under us. We're starting to be brave enough to go to certain events. You know, I think it'll just be good to just get in a room with a bunch of believers, the family of God, and to hear about Jesus and hear about what he calls us to. The world is mad. And we need now more than ever to arm ourselves with the correct weapons, and the correct weapons against the world as it is holiness. And it is also going to bring us closer to Jesus. And I don't think there is a better topic for the day than holiness.
With that, folks, again, October 22nd is the pre-conference, 23rd, 24th, Cruciform Conference in Carmel, Indiana, the Cruciform Conference on Holiness. You do not want to miss this. If you haven't heard some of the speakers that are there, you are going to want to be here to listen. If you haven't heard guys like Justin Peters, Gabe Hughes, you want to go and check this out. So make sure you sign up, register. Registration you can do at the door, but it is better for planning purposes that you register online. So cruciformministries.org. It is the Cruciform Conference. We are looking forward to seeing you there.